If I tell you, and Miss Wilson agrees, that anything you tell us won't go any further than this room, I really would like an explanation of that. Okay, with the understanding that I'll deny everything if anybody asks me. Understood, Prentice said.
Agreed,
Beth said. Well, the original idea, as I understand it, was to stash Charlie where he should have been all along, flying in the left seat of a Huey in an aviation company. Christ, he'd just gotten out of flight school, and he didn't even go through the Huey training. They just gave him a check ride. In a company, he could build up some hours. But Naylor figured if he sent him to a regular company, the same people who had put him in an Apache would put him back in one. So he sent him to McNabb, who had this civil affairs outfit as a cover for what he was really doing in the desert.
Which was?
Beth asked. Special forces, honey, Kowalski said. The guys with the green beanies.
Oh.
But it didn't work out that way. McNabb heard about the kid who'd flown the shot up Apache back across the berm, went for a look, liked what he saw, and put him to work flying him around. I understand they got involved in a lot of interesting stuff. And then McNabb found out that Charlie speaks German and Russian. I mean, really speaks it like a native. And that was really useful to McNabb. So, the war's over. McNabb gets his star. There were a lot of people who didn't think that would ever happen.
How is it that he speaks German and Russian like a native?
Beth interrupted. His mother was German. He was raised there. I don't know where he got the Russian. And some other languages, too. Anyway, McNabb is now a general. He's entitled to an aide. So he takes Charlie to brag with him as his aide. Kowalski stopped and smiled and shook his head.
Why are you smiling?
Charlie thought he was really hot stuff. And why not? He wasn't out of West Point a year, and here he was an aviator with the DFC, two Purple Hearts, a Bronze Star in the Combat Infantry badge, and now a general's aide. I didn't know about the CIB and the Bronze Star, Prentice said. Where do you get those? I saw the Bronze Star citation. It says he distinguished himself while engaged in intensive combat action of a clandestine and covert nature. I guess he got the CIB and the Second Purple Heart from the same place.
That's all it said? Prentice asked.
God only knows what McNabb did over there. All of it, covert and clandestine. He came out of that war, and you know how long it lasted. It took me longer to walk out of Cambodia. With a Distinguished Service Medal, a Purple Heart, a star for his CIB, and a star that most people never thought he'd get. Anyway, when Charlie got to brag, McNabb quickly took the wind out of his sails.
I'd like to know how he managed to do that,
Beth said sweetly. Kowalski gave her a look that was half curiosity and half frown, then went on.
When I heard Charlie was at Bragg, I went to see him the first time. He wasn't in McNabb's office. He was out in the boonies at Camp McCall taking green beanie qualification training, eating snakes and all that crap, you know. And before that, McNabb had sent him to jump school. That'll take the wind out of anybody's sails.
I thought he was General McNabb's aide.
Oh, he was, but first he had to go to Benning and McCall. Then, as an aide, McNabb really ran his ass ragged. What he was doing, of course, was training him, but Charlie didn't know that. He decided that God really didn't like him after all, that the fickle finger of fate had got him, that he was working for one mean son of a bitch. He told me that when his tour as an aide was up, it was sayonara, special forces back to aviation for him. McNabb was, of course, 1-2 jumps ahead of him. I was up there to see Charlie maybe 2-3 months ago on a, quote, blue flight cross-country exercise, end quote. McNabb sent for me, told me the conversation was private, and asked me what I thought of the 160th.
The Special Forces Aviation Regiment?
Beth asked.
Kowalski nodded. Special Operations Aviation Regiment, sore. I told him what I thought, which is that it's pretty good, and I would much rather be at Campbell flying with the Night Stalkers than teaching field-grade officers to fly here. He said he thought it would be just the place for Charlie to go when his aid tour was up. I told him I didn't think that with as little time as Charlie had, either total hours or in the Army, they'd take him. He said what he was thinking of doing was sending Charlie over here for a blue flight transition into the King Air, which he already knew how to fly, and what could be done while he was here to train him in something else, something that would appeal to the 160th. He said he knew two people who were going to have a quiet word in the ear of whoever selected people for the 160th, saying that they'd flown with him in combat and thought he could make it in 160th. Then he pointed to me and him, and he said, "If I hear you told him, or even if he finds out about this, I will shoot you in both knees with a 22 hollow point." Kowalski laughed. McNabb really likes Charlie. They're two of a kind. "So what are you doing for him here?" Prentice asked. "If it's got wings or rotary blades, by the time I send him back to Bragg, he will be checked out in it as pilot in command," Kowalski said. "I've even checked him out in stuff the Aviation Board has for testing that the Army hasn't even bought yet." "How do you get away with that?" Prentice asked. "I'm the vice president of the Instrument Examiner Board and the training scheduler for Blue Flight," Kowalski said. "Very few people ask me why I'm doing something, and a lot of people owe me favors. Like, I figure I owe Charlie several big ones." Prentice nodded. "Thanks, Pete," he said. "This is the favor you wanted? Telling you about Charlie?" "Yeah. And now I need one more. You going home from here?"
"Yeah."
"How about dropping Miss Wilson at Colonel Gremier's quarters? I have the feeling she'd rather be with anyone but me right now." Kowalski looked at the girl, then back at Prentice.
"You gonna explain that?" Kowalski said.
"You don't want to know, Pete."
"Yeah.
Sure. Gremier's house is right on my way.